Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In this pop culture saturated world, what's a nerd to do?
Hang out with your good pals on Nerdy Show, that's what.
Our flagship podcast is a weekly celebration of the multifaceted D20 that is the modern nerd.
When we're not devising horrors that combine VR and spiders or taste-testing weird food, we're discussing the latest geek happenings,
digging into our deepest nerd niches,
or interviewing a celebrity or two.
Head to nerdyshow.com or find us on iTunes and experience a multiverse of awesomeness.
State of the Empire is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. And is brought to you in part by Consequence of Sound, the web's foremost source of music and film news, reviews, and insights. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to State of the Empire, Nerdy Show Star Wars speculation podcast where we look for news in Alderaan places. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Doug.
Hey, I'm Matt.
And this episode, this is our review of The Last Jedi. We're going to go all in. If you haven't seen the movie, there's no blast doors here. It's honestly, our feelings on it are far, far too complicated to even bother to, like, we couldn't conceivably give a summary that doesn't involve a ton of deliberation. At this point, it's been about 24 hours since we've all respectively seen it. We couldn't get together sooner, unfortunately, but we're here. We've actually had a wealth of time to decompress. In fact, Matt's seen it twice at this point.
Mm-hmm. So we're beyond the blast doors, but this is Raftar. This is like the Raftar homeworld.
This place is fucking dangerous. They warned us. We were reading all the cautionary tales about how this is going to be a divisive Star Wars film. Polarizing.
I was like, how divisive could this really be? And boy,
this is one of the most divisive pop films I've ever seen.
Yeah, and we're both confused. We're all confused as to what it's like. I don't know. It's so weird.
That is that's the perfect adjective that I've been seeing that constantly. People online is that they're just confused if they like it, confused if they hated it. Like, it's crazy.
But everyone's having powerful feelings. There's not. I'm maybe among the most middle ground feelings on this out of anybody I know, and purely because there are some things that I think. Well, okay, everybody's in the same boat. There's some things people definitively like about it. And there's also some things that are just fucking confounding. And how confounding you find them to be, that
determines your overall enjoyment,
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your focus determines your reality.
And what's interesting is, you know, in the last episode we attempted to issue this teaser of all the data we'd found from the visual dictionary of The Last Jedi. We read an outline of the film which we didn't believe
That's
was true that ended up
all
being
of it.
Yeah. It ended up being real. So we all knew the plot of this film in bold strokes going into it, the outline, but made the concession of, like, even if this is true, the delivery of something.
Who knows? Yeah.
Yeah, it can be much different from a summary of it in a bullet-pointed list of plot points. And the reality was is that some stuff that I didn't think they were going to be able to pull off actually was done in a compelling way I couldn't have predicted.
Yeah, and certain things I was like, oh boy, this is gonna suck. I was like, oh, that was actually pretty well done. I was surprised. Like, so,
and meanwhile, I'm wondering what you guys are talking about.
Yeah, because Matt, you're well. Why don't you just fly off the chain right now? How do you feel?
I won't be able to fly off the chain as much as I have been because I have such a splitting headache talking about this movie for the last 2 days that you can't really even, like, it's just, it hurts so bad. It's okay. Here's the thing. those spoilers freaked me out when we read them last episode. But I feel like actually if you wrote this movie's plot down for me on paper and said this is what the movie's going to be about, I can see a very compelling film in there. I just had major problems with the execution, particularly the non-force aspect of the story.
Yeah, I think everybody can kind of agree that the plot line between Kylo, Rey, and Luke was actually pretty fucking great.
Yeah, it's like the whole movie. Yeah. That's what everyone was wanting to go into this movie scene. And for my money, it was also, I think, the strongest part, you know, obviously.
If you told me that Rey and Kylo were going to communicate across the Gulf of the Stars,
I'd have been like, nah, that's dumb.
Yeah, it's fucking stupid. There's no way that's going to be good, but it's actually really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought they did a great job with it. I think Hamill did a good job with it. I thought Serkis did a good job with it. That fight scene was terrific. Like, that conflict was good. You made me actually believe that there's some conflict in Kylo. Actually did a better job than convincing me there was conflict in Vader. You know, like, there's good human drama in that. It's just, I wish I could cut everything out of this movie and just make it 90 minutes about about Rey's story. Because everything about Finn and Poe's plot threads, like, I can't find anything redeemable in there. I mean, I could go on and on about how that humor was terrible. Like, I defy anyone to tell me that it wasn't one fart joke away from prequel humor. Like, BB-8 was shooting coins out of a cannon in him. You had an alien belching in his face. Him driving the AT-ST. Inappropriate comments from, you know, like... it's just hard to recall.
Here's the thing. All those things you just mentioned, those were a step too far, but not, you're right, not as far necessarily as the prequel humor.
I very, very close. Like, I can't separate an alien belching in BB-8's face because the slot machines looked like BB-8 for some reason. Also, Finn and Rose got arrested for a parking violation. That is a shitty spy film. They're literally arrested for a parking violation.
Yeah,
and,
I mean,
just even diverting from the humor, the Finn and Rose story was so unearned and so, like, character development-less. Like, it was just, you know, she's crying over her sister, and she just hates evil in the world. And man, Canto bites evil. Don't try to actually show me it, like, too much, except some people getting whipped. Like, and I wish I could, she said, I wish I could put my fist through this city, this beautiful, lousy city. Like, it's some bad writing in the Canto Bight stuff. There was no selling me on first that exterior, that beautiful exterior, and then showing me the horrible interior. It was done in 30 seconds and was just supposed to make me believe it. And it didn't earn it. None of that sequence was earned. Fathier chase was terrible.
I have a feeling that the bulk of the deleted scenes comes from Canto Bight.
I believe that.
Because they think of how fast they got there. We didn't even see them arrive.
For context, if you haven't heard our prior episode, Rian Johnson's original cut was it was just over 3 hours.
Yeah. I'm willing to bet there's a shit ton more at Canto Bight because of how fast it moves when they get there. Like, they get there and then, like, we don't even see them arrive. We just see the crash shuttle. And it's like, wait, that was their shuttle. Okay, great. And then they're already in the casino. Where's this master codebreaker? There he is. You know, like, there was no, you know.
And then arrest them for parking violation. Like, literally, that alien, like, followed them into the casino just to make sure Canto Bight PD arrested them.
Right.
Like, who was that guy? He looked like a patron.
Well, he, as we outlined in the prior episode, he's a driftwood artist.
Oh, he's the driftwood artist. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I don't understand the Canto Bight sequence at all. It doesn't – Maz specifically says you need a master codebreaker. He's the only one who can get you in. You need a master codebreaker. By the way, the whole use of the phrase codebreaker also is sort of emblematic of another problem I had with the movie, which is a lack of confidence in world building. They didn't want to use the slicer phrase because people don't know what it is. And it's a problem that I have with Force Awakens where they don't just say, oh, I'm hauling Rathtars. They have to have the other characters kind of say what the audience is thinking, which is, what are Rathtars? Oh, have you heard of the massacre of blah, blah, blah? No, I haven't. Oh, well, good thing that you haven't. You know, there's a lack of confidence in just dropping phrases like Lucas used to do so well in the original trilogy when he says, he fought with me in the Clone Wars. You, the audience, are thinking, what's the Clone Wars? but I don't need a character saying that. Like, Rose hears the Fathiers running outside, and she's like, are those what I'm thinking, what I think they are? And she runs outside, and they don't say, wow, they have Fathier racing here. They say, you know, those are Fathiers. Finn's like, what are those? And, you know, she has to explain it. Like, this movie is just filled with that. And Finn can't even say the names of the crystal foxes. He goes, we're the crystal critters. Because they don't want to use, you know, they have to just spell it out for the audience. Or don't, because God forbid they need to leave something for people to go figure out on their own.
Now, this thing, it's... We do our damnedest to be as objective as possible on the show, and all this, all of our, any kind of intensity we have, it comes from a place of having a lot of experience with, you know, world building, storytelling, and familiarity with the craft of the original Star Wars films, and all variances in between. And there is a definable shift in what Star Wars has become from the Disney transition. This show, right, State of the Empire, existed on, like, from the moment that Disney purchased Lucasfilm to present. Mm-hmm. And it's been interesting, you know, seeing what that, we're only just now really getting a good sense of what that transition means, watching them struggle through the anthology, like, films, and then seeing what the difference is between, you know, okay, well, so The Force Awakens was a first step for attempting to relaunch Star Wars, and it was done rather quickly. So what does it look like when they have more confidence and they do it again? And then we get this thing that is, that there's so much to love about, from my perspective, of stuff in this film. So, mm-hmm, so many things that are, like, visually stunning, but most of it represents untapped potential. I think this movie, as long as it was the longest Star Wars film to date, and as long as it could have been over 3 hours, it still had more content than one film could support while qualifying all those character arcs and everything else going on there that they had to abbreviate consistently. Like, we could have had a great film on Canto Bite where that was at the very least a quarter of the movie, but it was not a quarter of the movie. It was nowhere near a quarter of the film.
Yeah, it was like 15 minutes. And I guess I've never disliked a Star Wars film before. I even like the prequels because, you know, they can leave me intrigued to find out more. And I mean, you mentioned that it's the longest film, but, like, the longest film, but how much did we get out of it? Like, did we actually, like, I don't feel like I got, like, 2.5 hours worth of, like, mental content out of it. Like, I got some good Force conflict, but, like, the rest of the movie is, to me, was just so lifeless. Like, I don't know. I didn't get anything. And yeah, I know I'm the negative voice in this group, so I should probably.
Wait, and what's interesting, you're not normally the negative voice.
Yeah, going into this movie, I thought this was going to be the exact opposite of, like, where it ended up, where, you know, you'd be saying, well, no, it's great. Because I actually went back and listened to our Force Awakens review just to hear, like, what was our. Because that was, like, fresh out of the theater, right? That was, like, the first Star Wars movie since, you know, Revenge of the Sith in 2005. And we were all just like, what? Oh, my gosh. You know, all of our theories on what was going on, what was going to happen. And we were all so sure that, well, except for me, everyone else but me was sure that Rey was going to be Luke's daughter. You know, like, all these crazy things, you know, it's, oh, so quaint now. But there was all this sort of excitement. But then halfway through the episode, it all started to be like, well, yeah, there was that thing they didn't do. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, okay. And then pretty soon, it you could hear over the course of the episode, it developed into kind of mostly where we feel about Force Awakens now. And I'm wondering where we're going to be 6 months from now. And, you know, because, I mean, think of how we were 6 months after Rogue One and where we're going to be 6 months after this. Like, when Han Solo comes out, when we see Han Solo, the Solo film, how are we going to feel looking back on this film? And there's no way to guess now, but I don't know. The only reason I even bring that up is because of how different I feel versus how Matt feels. But I totally understand everything. That's the thing. Like, I'm agreeing with all these, like, nitpicks that you're pointing out. They just didn't bother me. I mean, I can't.
Right.
You know,
right,
that's
right.
The thing. Like, it's like I can't argue with the fact that, Rose and Finn, everything on Canto Bite was, like, just. They, like you said, they were selling us on this idea. It's like a spy movie on Canto Bight, like an early intrigue and this the decadence of the city. And I'm like, oh shit, that sounds amazing.
And it looked amazing.
And it looked amazing, everything we were seeing. But then we saw like 4 seconds of it.
And it turned into it turned into this film's cantina sequence, because every film has a cantina sequence now.
Yeah. Yep. They even kind of had a riff on the cantina music playing.
And I was super excited because we saw pictures of those tree people from beforehand. The people who were like, I don't think we ever saw them in the film, but in the art book, the music is performed by these tree people whose communication is based around music. And what was it? What we ended up getting sounded basically like that was something that really, like, as soon as it hit, I was like, oh no, like it's Figure and Dan all over again. But like, that was special before. Why are we hearing it now?
On one hand, I'm like, one of the things I really liked about the film was, it showed new Star Warsy things in new Star Warsy places, but at the exact same time, not nearly giving enough of it. And like, it felt this movie. I wonder if it was edited by committee where they were like, it has to move at a breakneck speed. Rian Johnson, you made a boring 3-hour movie. No one wants to see that shit. You got to move. And so like, as soon as you get settled into a scene, it's like, oh man, we just learned something great about the Force, and we're gonna see what's happening with Rose and Finn on Cantabite. And I'm like, all right, well, maybe something interesting will happen now. And they meet DJ. And I had mixed feelings about DJ because DJ was cool. And I like Benicio del Toro's interpretation, like his characterization of it. But when I saw the actual Codebreaker, I was like, I kind of wish they actually got that guy.
Yeah, the storyline attached to Master Codebreaker and Lovey that we know more about thanks to us reading the visual guide than what happened in the film. We didn't even know they were going to be characters in this movie.
Right.
But like, wow. As soon as I saw those people in play, I was like, oh shit, this is going to be incredible. Wow, surprises. And then nope, they're arrested.
If they actually got Master Codebreaker instead of DJ, which I grant, I like DJ, it was fine.
DJ was like, there's many things surrounding how his character was implemented that are full of like
weird questions.
Yeah, that are big plot holes. But the actual portrayal of that character and everything that character for Star Wars was like a little piece of Blade Runner in Star Wars, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, and it's funny, Blade Runner. You kind of hit the nail on the head. I didn't know how to vocalize it, but that's pretty much true. But that's a whole other discussion. But I after the movie was over and I was thinking back, like I like DJ, but I started to picture what kind of movie it would have been if they got the Codebreaker, the Master Codebreaker. And suddenly I pictured like the perfect marriage of like George Lucas prequel era, like dashing swashbuckler, like, ha, you need me? Fine, I'll do this. And just like being the cavalier, you know, master thief.
That's exactly what I'm thinking of, the cavalier.
I was just like, holy fuck, that would be amazing. But instead we got DJ, which was okay, but it was just different. And but the thing that is frustrating, and I understand why, was that it's like, oh, Maz says you can only get the Master Codebreaker. He's the only one who could pull this off. But as soon as they're thrown in jail with DJ, he's just like, I could do it, I guess. And they're like, all right, we have to go with you. And I didn't understand why they were so hesitant to do that. I mean, I know they're breaking out of jail, but was there really no other way to contact the Master Codebreaker? He doesn't have a space Facebook?
I honestly believe Rian Johnson spent 90% of his film figuring out the Force story.
And I totally, like, I almost think it's worth it because of what we got with the Force story. Like, if in order to get that Force story, he had to put that much focus on it, which, I mean, if I was asked to make this film, that's the part I'd be shitting bricks about. I'd be like, oh my God.
Oh,
yeah. You know,
you're absolutely right about
like,
that.
I could totally do the hide and seek, the cat and mouse game on Canto Bite, spin a little, political statements in there. That's all fun and good. Some comic relief. Great. I could do that in my sleep. But when it comes to what does Luke say to Rey about the nature of the Force? What does Yoda say to Luke to make him change his mind? I would like cry myself to sleep every night for like 3 months trying to make it work. So they made that part work. I think we're all in agreement that those were like the best parts. So if it means sacrificing like Rose and Finn and all that other stuff.
But that kills me. Like, Finn was my favorite character, favorite protagonist coming out of Force Awakens. And they chose to revert his character. Like, he already made in Force Awakens the conscious choice to not run from the fight, but to join the fight. He was about to leave on that freighter on Takodana and like leave Rey and them behind. And then Rey gets taken and he makes the conscious choice to go get her, to go to Starkiller Base and take down Phasma and take down the First Order's weapon and to become a hero. But what did they do in this movie? He comes out of a coma and he's the same fucking person he was on Takodana. It's just not good writing.
Like, now, yeah,
it drives me nuts.
It was weak, but I didn't necessarily interpret it that he reverted completely back to how he was on Takodana, because he wasn't actually abandoning the fleet, but then to even backpedal what I just said, it's like he did say, look, they're going to come here. They're going to kill everybody. It's
yeah,
very,
he said,
it did,
this,
it,
he said it, yeah. This fleet is doomed.
It did mirror what he said, where he's just like, you don't know a thing about me, and we got to run, because that's the only way. So,
yeah,
yeah,
he's like, yeah, the First Order, he said, you can't, in Force Awakens, said you can't stand up to the First Order. Yeah. Well, he did, and they blew up Starkiller Base.
But I did
he's
kind of
hero.
Feel, at the time, I felt like that it was that he was more focused on saving Rey. Like, he put Rey above the Resistance. Like, on Taco Donna, he was ready to leave Rey and everyone. He was, like, just
no, that's fair, but I think what he went through on Starkiller Base also, like, it lumps in that, like...
True, yeah.
You know, he becomes that here. I just... To me, that it's just everyone... I mean, you know, Finn... They sacrificed Finn's character to tell this Rose story, which I don't think was very good. And, I've really been trying to defend that Rose character in the initial phases of its casting, because I thought it would be interesting and everything else. I just don't think she was very good, and just don't think that they earned, like, you know, the sacrifice that she tried to make at the end, which I thought at the time, I'm like, oh wow, she really sacrificed herself, and then, you know, they didn't do that.
It's weird, but like in the opening when you see Paige's death, I was like moved. Yeah. I was like, oh shit. And like, if they did this for the sister who just died in 2 minutes and I barely knew her, I can't wait to see what they're going to dig in with Rose. And then she just kind of fangirls out over Finn. And it kind of, like you say, it kind of is, it's kind of like they wanted to tell her story about being like a child labor and stuff and shoehorn that into a story. And Finn's just kind of there for her to tell the story to. And I don't know, like it was weird and it was rocky, you know, but. At the end of the day, it was just, I don't know, like, if for whatever reason, it just didn't bother me as much. Like, I do see the problem, but for me, it as soon as we got back to, you know, Rey and Luke on the planet, it was like, okay, we're back to the good part. It's already kind of out of sight, out of mind. And every time we were going back to Finn and Rose, you know, it's just like,
I really
was better.
Wish I could. Like, I want a 90-minute version of this movie that is just the Force conflict. Like, if I can cut that, like, that. That to me is like a really good Star Wars film.
I want to point out, everybody, that we are aware of what's happening with Matt's audio, but this has been so hard to get this recording done that we're just running with it. It's an unfortunate thing. Normally it happens, man. I mean, we try to troubleshoot it a little bit, but this has been like, we're recording it really late at night. We've tried what we can, outside of delaying the recording further. So we're just going to do it. So apologies. We'll fix it for next time.
Yeah, and I just maybe I can start to contribute maybe a little bit less in order to avoid it, but I just want to get it out there, Poe stuff.
Say what you got to say. Yes, Poe.
Yeah, I mean, Poe throughout this film is constantly disobeying orders and getting people killed. Lots of people. You know, they were all ready to go to hyperspace before the Dreadnought showed up, you know, and the base was evacuated. He decided to kill all the bombers and the snub fighters, and then... He sends Rose and Finn on this mission, and the only reason why the First Order figures out that the cloaked ships are heading to Crait is because of the master, or, you know, the non-master codebreaker DJ that they brought on board. So Finn ends up getting, or sorry, Poe ends up getting most of the remaining Resistance fighters killed as well.
But hey,
but
you know what, Matt?
Instead of being punished,
I like him.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But Holdo likes him, Leia likes him, and he gets no consequences, and he is unofficially handed the keys to the rebellion, because we know Carrie Fisher won't be back, which I did enjoy her performance in this movie.
It was amazing. She was so much better than the prior film.
Yeah, she was great. And however, she's definitely unofficially handing it off to him anyways. At the end, when she's like, what are you looking at me for? Follow him. Like, she's saying he's the new leader of the rebellion. He didn't earn it. He's a terrible leader. Like, I don't.
Yeah, it's irrefutable. Everything he did led to the massacring of the rebellion and a bunch of dangerous situations that he honestly did nothing to fix. He only made it worse.
Yeah, and what I love is Leia literally says to him, you can't fix your problems by jumping in an X-Wing and blowing stuff up. 5 minutes later, the First Order shows up, and he asks for permission to get in an X-Wing and blow stuff up. And the funny ha-ha joke is, yeah, go ahead. Where is his consequences? He gets demoted for 5 minutes. Like, it's like I was watching Star Trek Into Darkness, where they strip the captain rank off of Kirk for, like, a scene. Like, it's just... But that's what my problem with the film is that everything around the big meat is just so bad. It's like I have to dig through a rotten crust to get to the really good stuff. And I can't stop thinking about the bad stuff.
And for me, the Poe stuff, which I think, like, he's such a great character. Oscar Isaac is so compelling. There's so many reasons to like Poe that have been developed over a long period of time at this point with, like, the Poe comic and everything, where he's not an irresponsible person. He's very, like, he's very good at his job. And instead, we, you know, of course, the films are the master plan for the story, and everything else is superfluous and subject to change no matter what they say. But, you know, here we have he's being genuinely irresponsible. The first half hour of the film, which is largely Poe-centric, is fucking terrible. His jokes to General Hugs, that was so poorly done. Could not have been done worse. And it was a terrible way to open a Star Wars film.
No. You got to take that back, because on the previous one, you were saying, like, oh, it's going to be General Sucks. I just know it. Oh, my God, it's going to be so terrible. Yeah. And, like, Hugs is better than Sucks. You got to give me that.
No.
Okay. Hugs is better than Sucks, but that belongs in a Marvel movie. That does not belong in Star Wars.
But here's the thing. It's not the Hugs. It's not the Sucks. It's not the Fucks. It's none of that. It's the fact that it was that goofy phone conversation. Yeah. That was him taking, he was like, what's a relatable thing from Earth that I can do? Let me do that bit. And then, like, you know, Hugs with an H. Like, let me, like, make you forget that you're in a Star War and talk about, you know, like, Hugs and spelling.
He also refers to the door guarding the crate base as a big-ass door, which I was like, whoa, did he just call it a big-ass door?
That's fine.
But the
beginning, like the phone conversation, the inexplicably supercharged X-wing with, like, that, you know, we have explanation from the visual guide, but not from the film. All the ships just like, we got a chance with these bombers. The bombers that get completely massacred, that have all this character built in them, all these visual character and so much dynamism to, even though, like, the premise of the space bombing is kind of flimsy at best, but, like, it amounts to nothing. It amounts to just I was like, oh my God, this film is off to a terrible start. And then it got so much better. It just got incrementally better the whole time, getting better, except for that, for all the drama that they implanted with Poe's plotline, it was nullified by that all this happened. And then Leia and Holdo have that exchange about how great he is. And it's just, I'm like, what the fuck is happening here? There's no consequence.
And I don't understand. There's so much not telling people what the plan is. I feel like Poe loved the plan once he found out what it was from Leia. You know, so why didn't they just say what our plan is? Luke does the same thing. Luke shows up to stall, you know, the First Order, but does he tell anybody that's what he's doing? No, he leaves it for Poe to go, wait a minute, I know what he's doing. It just takes Luke saying so. That to me is, once again, I don't care. Like, I like the events that are happening in the movie, but the plotting is so bad. Like, 3PO and BB-8 show up and say there's no way out of the base, just through the front door. And then when the Crystal Foxes leave, they go, wait a minute, maybe a natural opening happened. Like, they didn't think of that? Like, no one bothered to just walk down the tunnels to find them? Leia super Leia's back into the ship, which I actually thought was kind of a beautiful moment. But then when they're faced with some rocks, she can't move the rocks. We need Rey to do that. Like, the plotting doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. I kind of wonder how many versions, like, not even what was cut, but how many versions of the scenes did they film? Because that's a popular thing to do with Disney, is that they'll play every angle and pick the best angle. And how much, you know, how much do they need to lead viewers by the nose? And it's troubling. I feel like it's a cheap shot to make the generalizations of, oh, well, Disney, but that's the reality here, because I wouldn't be surprised if there's not somebody at Disney who's the sweetener, who takes every major motion picture and comes in and adds in the jokes afterwards, because they all have the same cadence. They're all, like, written by the same person. They all read the same. What is that? And why do people respond to it? Do people actually like this? Like, because there was not a ton of laughs. The biggest laughs in the theater were all 3PO with brilliantly delivered lines from Anthony Daniels. I just don't know what's happening. Like,
it was like I had two different audiences. When I saw it in the Cinerama opening night, like, people just not really laughing at the humor. And today's showing at the Chinese theater, people were just eating it up. Every little humorous, even things I didn't think were that humorous, they were, like, I don't think were intended to be humor, that is, they were laughing at.
What does it mean? Like, what's happening with the cultural consciousness? Like, what do people like? Are we not in the realm, like, the three of us? Are we not in the same realm as everyone else anymore? Are we playing in a different ball pit here?
I don't know. I read an interesting comment on kind of like, because that's what it's been a lot too, is I see a lot of people saying like, wow, this movie did things that I've never seen before. And like, I want somebody to tell me what those things were. Like, I haven't heard anyone like say, like, the one thing I did read is Rey in Snoke's throne room, and she reaches for the lightsaber. And this review that I was reading was like, oh, and then Rian Johnson just completely subverts fan expectations and makes the lightsaber come around and hit her in the head. It's like a message directly to the audience, like, this isn't going to go the way you think. Like, I'm changing the game with, you know, with this humorous moment. I'm sorry, but Vader and Luke and the Emperor on the Death Star, there wasn't a comic relief moment needed to, like, you know, just make that tension, you know, beautiful. It was just it was just drama. Like, there wasn't a silly moment in it needed. And I don't understand, like, do we really have to start talking to audiences? Like, I've heard that half of this movie supposedly is like lines directed at the audience about like, this isn't going to go the way that you think, and this is all new, and things are changing, and everything's, you know, kill the past. He's actually talking to the crowd. Why can't the movie speak for itself? Why does the movie have to speak like supposedly talking to the audience?
I don't understand someone thinking that it's talking to the audience. That's new for me. Like, I felt the movie was speaking on its own merit just fine. I mean, like, and to think, no, I don't recall laughing when like the lightsaber spun around and hit Rey. I didn't think that was funny.
The two showings I saw, they laughed during that part.
Oh man, when that happened, I was like, oh shit! Like, to me, that's like, he's about to beat the shit out of her. Was all what I was thinking. It's like, he is fucking toying with her so bad, and then of course he starts smacking her around and like throwing her across the thing and sliding her over there. He says, "Look over there," and she doesn't look, and he just shoves her over there. I was like intimidated. I wasn't like, oh, this.
I'll say most of that scene, like 95% of that scene, I do really think is really great stuff.
Yeah.
But that one, I just, yeah, I mean, the crowd laughing, just, I was like, what? This is like,
it's,
this,
you know,
is an intense moment.
You know, I think here's something that I've noticed happening way more recently than at least I remember when I was younger, seeing just movies in general. People laugh way more readily now when they're uncomfortable. Like, in any film, if you're not sure something's supposed to be funny, you just start laughing. It's like a self-defense mechanism for some people, where if they don't know how to react, or if they know how they're expected to react but don't want to react in a sad way, like cry per se, they just start laughing. Or like, you know, people would brag, like when they're like, oh, I went to go see that movie. God, that movie was supposed to be scary, but it wasn't scary. I was laughing the whole time. Everybody's looking at me like I was crazy. I'm like, all right, shut the fuck up. I get it. You're trying to act tough. No one wants to open their emotions in a darkened room with strangers, I guess.
Right.
But right. I'm trying, like a good example was I went to go see Captain Phillips, and at the end, Tom Hanks is giving the performance of a lifetime. he's going through the stages of like shock. He's like going into shock after everything that's happened to him. And there was like two people in the audience who just started to laugh, like nervous chuckle laugh, because this is a very raw human moment. So it doesn't surprise me that in something as mainstream and as that tries to play as broad as possible, like a Disney-owned Star Wars film, that when they have these situations, not only does Disney probably feel like we need to have humor in it to sort of relieve the tension, but we also got to play to a broad audience and let them know that it's going to be okay, that they shouldn't be that scared. Which, I don't know, it's weird. But at the moment, seeing it in the theater, I didn't think that thing was funny at all, and I didn't think it was trying to be, but I guess if people laugh...
Speaking to the broad audience thing, Nerdy Show's Brandon, who is, if you go way back to early State of the Empire episodes, is on the show.
Yeah.
He asked a very important question. Who the fuck is this movie for?
Yeah.
Because it's got like some extremely dark moments, and then, I mean, not that Jedi didn't have, you know, Ewoks and also the confrontation in the throne room, but like because of the comedy, because of like the way it weaves and orbs around everything, like, I mean, this you
it's
can
trying
this,
to be for everybody.
It's trying to be for everybody, but like, does that mean that it's in the end like for nobody? I mean, it's for everybody because it's Star Wars, but it's a preconceived notion of because Star Wars, then X and Y. So
I think we're feeling like there was way more comedy and way more drama mixed into it because of the runtime.
Well, also because of the whiplash, because every time it got going in one mood.
There was egregious, like, inappropriate moments, too. Like, I agree with what you're saying, Doug, about the inappropriate, you know, like, laughter when you're uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But, like, Disney was doing it to themselves. When Luke shows up to Krait and he goes to talk to Leia, and the first line of their reunion is a joke about her changing her hair. Like, when that first happened, when they were on screen together, I was tearing up. I was about to start crying like a baby. And then she made that fucking joke. Like, it's not... Rian Johnson was uncomfortable with that moment and had to put humor in there.
Hmm. Do you know that for a fact?
Well, no, but that's what I'm interpreting from a filmmaking standpoint. That's the thing. It's like, my problems with this movie, like, I'm not trying to say that the movie doesn't have Star Wars look and feel. I've argued on this podcast that I hate that phrase because it means you don't want to do new things. But I still want to argue the movie's merits as a movie, and I just – things like that just destroyed it as a movie to me. Not even as a Star Wars film, as a movie.
I can see why he was very scared and wanted to play certain things safe, though. Because
this was a terrifying movie to make.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine. I don't know why he volunteered to do it. Like, because I don't know anyone who would volunteer. You'd have to be insane at this point. And to go in there and try and do this, but then be like, you know what? I'm going to do crazy radical things, which are some of the things I liked. And then try and play it safe in these emotional moments because you're scared of what – maybe I'm going too far. Maybe it's too serious and people are going to think I'm too serious. Ah, fuck. Well, maybe people are going to think this is too silly. Well, now I got to make it more serious. And it's like you're just going back and forth and, ah, now it's too slow. I got to cut 30 minutes out and try and speed it up. But, ah, now there's emotional whiplash, so I better tone this down. I can see how there will never be anything but problems with it because you're making an impossible film. Like it's – Star Wars is too big. It's too big to fail. And it's too big to ever please anyone.
It's too big, like, to be an auteur filmmaker thing anymore.
Which now, if you want the auteur filmmaker thing, it's going to have to be a spinoff film. But even the spinoff films are not quite there
under
yet.
Under extreme scrutiny.
Yeah.
and they'll hand it to somebody like Rian Johnson, who seemed to be ready to do something along those lines, and did enough of it, impressed upon them enough that they gave him a whole trilogy of films forthcoming. But to what end? I don't know.
And I would be way more interested in what Rian Johnson wants to do with his own personal story trilogy, where he doesn't have to meet like the insane demands of like the main Star Wars.
We've been jumping all over the place right now, but let's go into like the end results of this film,
sure.
Which is this film set up a new status quo at the end of the second movie, with only one movie left in this alleged trilogy, unless they're gonna be like, surprise, it's a quadrilogy.
I'm sure they're going to.
But you think so?
Yeah, because it's once they're done with this supposed trilogy, what are they gonna do? They're gonna sit on it for 20 years and just mix one offs?
That's what they said they were gonna do. Not that I believe them necessarily, but the Star Wars television show. Because here's the thing: there was so much story crammed into this one fucking movie.
People were like, "Oh, is it gonna be too much like Empire?" I'm like, dude, this was like fucking Return of the Jedi.
Like, this could have been a better 8-part television miniseries than a film. If they have all these expectations about how they want to get from point A to point B in this duration of time. The format is garbage. If you want to do a trilogy of films, then you better come in with a story that you have when you set out on the trilogy, not J.J. Abrams mystery boxing it in the first one, saying, I don't know what the next guy's going to do, but we're going to make the most expensive, exquisite corpse of all time. I'm going to start it. Someone does the next bit. It's all written off the cuff. No one has a plan. And they basically, you know, say that with like, hey, you think Snoke's a big deal? Snoke's dead. Whatever. Hey, you think
Rey's... how's Luke going to react? He's going to toss the lightsaber away. Rey was nobody. Like, all the mystery box elements were none of them received actual, like, came in with responses, I guess.
Well, and even physical manifestation of it, when Rey shows up, we talked about this in the prior episode, we know from the visual dictionary that the reason Luke was in his ceremonial Jedi robes out of nowhere, even though he was hermiting the entire time, is because he was actually about to well, as we saw when he put those robes back on, he was about to burn down the Force tree, and Rey interrupted him coincidentally. But that's right. I mean, obviously that's bullshit. That's the costume that J.J. Abrams put him in, and Rian Johnson said, I have another idea, and it doesn't involve Luke dressing that way, so let's come up with an explanation for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how you fucking make these kind of movies. George Lucas had a vision, and that vision changed exponentially from film to film, but it still had the hallmarks in place.
There was an interview I read today, actually, with Ben Burtt. And
that's a sound designer.
Yes, of the original Star Wars trilogy and the prequels. He had nothing to do with any of these movies so far, the new trilogy. and he just still has a job and an office over at Lucasfilm. He's in an office somewhere. And Disney basically told him, he's like, oh, do you want me to work on some of these movies? And they're like, you know what? You go ahead and just make up any sounds you want, send them our way, and we'll decide if we're going to use them. And that's it. He's still in there. And like, you need to read this interview because it's really sad. It's like, what the fuck are you doing to Ben Burtt? The man's a fucking legend.
Yeah, he's a master in his field. Like, yeah. There's no one else like him.
And they're not using him. But the reason I bring it up is because they say, well, how do you feel about, you know, Disney owning? And he's like, well, you know, if they don't want to use me, that's their choice. He was very laid back about it, but you could tell he really wanted to get to work because he has opinions on things and he has insight because he worked on 6 movies prior. But he says, you know, say what you will about it, you know, with George, but at least with George, it was a one-stop thing. It was one guy. And if you had an idea, you talked to George, and either it worked or it didn't, but because it was his vision, it was his decision. Now, there are several groups I have to go through, and this group has to approve before it moves on to this group, and then this group has to approve before it moves on to this group before I get to talk to anybody. And that's really sad, especially for a legend like him. Mm-hmm. So I can see how, again, the whole way Disney's making movies by committee and everything else. And I, you know, George, I don't know how much of George's original plan carried over to Empire Strikes Back and then to Return of the Jedi. I don't know how direct of a hand he had in it. I like to read the original scripts, and those do seem to help and paint some picture, but you really don't know how much of it was George just saying, yeah, I like that, go with that. Or if he was like, no, that's not how it's supposed to happen. Like, I don't know. But with this, I think we are starting to see some of the, you know, cracks in the foundation here, when you really are just sort of like, well, we don't know, just go ahead and do whatever you kind of want. And as long as this fits in, as long as you listen to us when we say this needs to have a joke, this needs to be faster, if you're willing to let us help edit the movie, then you can do whatever you want. And I think Gareth Edwards said, yes, I agree. Go ahead and edit the movie. You know, this is the movie. We don't like it. Well, let's re-edit it. I'm willing to work with you as we re-edit. Oh, very good. And with Miller and whatever.
Lord Miller.
Yeah, Lord Miller. It was like, hey, we need to edit this. And they said, no, you don't. This is our movie. And they said, all right, you're fired. Goodbye. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, this is all speculation on my part, but it just seems to fit this pattern of, like, if you're a giant corporation like Disney, which just recently bought Fox, and they now own 40% of all movies coming out every year and 40% of all TV produced, you know, the fictional TV stuff every year, I don't see them being big risk takers. It's, you know, it's whatever. That all being said, I still think The Last Jedi, as far as a movie being made by committee, entertained me, and it had the thing that I thought was the most important thing that they were going to fuck up, which is everything about the Force. That part they actually landed. So that's why I have faith moving into the next thing, except for the fact that now it's J.J. Abrams. I'm worried again because I don't want Giant Hurt Ball 4. You know, I don't want a repeat of, oh shit, there are a lot of fans were, this is how I picture it going, right? J.J. Abrams sees the response to the prequels. So does Disney. They say, whatever you do, don't do that. And he goes, okay, I'm going to do what people really like. They like A New Hope. Let's do A New Hope. And then I'll pass it off. Then whoever the next filmmaker will be will take it and do something great. The next filmmaker takes it into a new direction. A lot of people don't like it. And they say, J.J., we need you back. Whatever you do, don't do what he did. And it's like, okay, what's the safe bet now? Well, Return of the Jedi is a safe bet now. But Rian Johnson already shoved Return of the Jedi into this movie. Mm-hmm. So how are you going to eat? So I'm worried now, because now you put JJ back into a position where he could just do Return of the Jedi again, but now we can't because it's already been taken from him. And the mystery box ain't going to fucking cut it anymore. And we see sequels like fucking Into Darkness. And after this was already so dark, I'm just worried now. And if it was Rian Johnson again, I would at least say, well, he's probably going to at least continue in the same direction he started. But now I'm feeling like, you thought there was emotional whiplash between scenes of this movie? Shit, man. I think there's going to be emotional whiplash toward the next film. Yeah.
Well, and what's interesting is this movie immediately followed the events of the former movie. Well, here we have a new status quo established where we have, like, the Resistance is now officially the Rebellion again. And there's this theme of Force users, like, you know, untrained adepts out in the world.
Yeah,
which is
there's a lot about the theme that I could go on, because you'd have to shut me up, though, because I'll go on.
The First Order has been, I assume, like, not decimated exactly, but like severely, but like basically the rebellion and the first, it's like, what if the Imperials were not well established? They didn't have a stranglehold over the universe. People were very afraid of them, mm-hmm. but like they were, it's two warring factions and hey, everybody pick a side. That's where we are right now. With these two very destabilized groups, very unfocused groups, and then we've have these like the Jedi in the middle of it. So this is the status quo that the film leaves us with, and it's a very interesting status quo. It's definitely not one I would necessarily like have predicted, especially not here at the end of the second film with all this these big huge ideas needing to be resolved in a single movie. Hypothetically,
I don't think they're going to solve the status quo. I think it's just now a permanent status.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and t-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I think by the time this trilogy is over, I think Kylo Ren and Rey's stories will be over. But I think I think Disney wants the Empire in control, because that works with Star Wars Land. It works to just continue the Star Wars forever, because that's what they want.
It's the military industrial complex.
They want rebellion versus empire, which is why I think this movie rebirthed the rebellion. I think when this next movie starts up, the First Order will have consolidated power behind Kylo, because probably not all their resources were, you know, involved in this fight.
There's probably going to be a massive jump in time, which is the first time in this trilogy, like between Empire and New Hope.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there will be a very interesting thing with Force Ghost Luke between Rey and Kylo. And I think that Force bond will continue, because that was really freaking cool. And like, but I don't think their objective anymore is to take down the First Order. I think Disney's perfect situation would be a permanent, like, evil empire. Ironic, considering, you know, them. But, you know, it's... So, yeah, I do think this trilogy is going to end in a trilogy, but I would not be surprised to see Rian Johnson's trilogy just feature a different story within that First Order versus Rebellion, like, new permanent galactic civil war, I guess.
Let me tell you some of the things that I really liked about Last Jedi, especially I think that pertain to this theme that a lot of people seem to really hate. For example, I loved the ongoing thing of this is not the way, it's not going to go the way that you think, let the past die, and all those other things, because we need them before, because I've been wanting new Star Wars for fucking forever. So when Luke, and I even said, you can hear it on the last episode, I'm like, oh man, if she hands that lightsaber to Luke and he just throws it over the edge, I'd be so fucking cool. And then it happened, and I'm just like, yes! But then I could feel 1,000 voices cry out in terror. Like, it's like, but I'm like, you know what? Fuck that lightsaber. Like, I'm over it. Like, we need to stop this masturbatory fetishization of everything original trilogy. And this is coming from a guy who, I'll defend like Empire as the by far the best movie till like the day I die, unless something better comes along. But in order for us to get a new story that's not just a recycled repeat thing over and over and over again, you have to break the cycle. You have to let the past die. Otherwise, you're going to be pulling out these old actors over and over.
I agree with you completely. However, just to play devil's advocate here, Empire and Jedi didn't repeat A New Hope. You know, they did their own new thing. But
yeah.
But then that gets lumped into, like, they don't want to repeat the original trilogy. How often has the original trilogy been repeated except for Force Awakens?
Well, one would argue that Return of the Jedi was it's yet another Death Star.
Because of the Death Star, obviously that's a big thing, but it definitely was a little bit.
Going back to Tatooine, got to go back to Jakku, got to go back to Tatooine, and you get another Death Star.
Yeah, I suppose the Tatooine thing, I guess it would have been nice if they had Jabba's palace on a different, like, thing, but I guess early on they supposedly established that he was a Tatooine gangster. But I guess it probably would have been better not to go back there. But I wouldn't argue Return of the Jedi's structure, though. Like, obviously, it's got familiar elements. But, like, Return of the Jedi as a movie composed. As a matter of fact, if you want to talk about, you know, breaking conventions, they did Tatooine differently. They did the Death Star differently. You know, like, he was already doing things differently with familiar things, which is what people are hailing this film for. Which is like, oh, we have a scene parading her in front of the Emperor, but it went down differently. Mm-hmm. You know, and then we have a scene with the walkers, you know, coming towards the base, but it went down differently. Like, I feel like we've already done that. But I'm just saying that, like, I didn't think that the problem with, like, repeating the original trilogy was that actually that big of an issue, except for, like, marketing as an issue. I'm not saying we should be copying the original trilogy. I really don't want to do that. But I just don't think it was as big of a problem as we suspected it was.
All I know is that for everything that this movie did to be like, all right, we need to move on. I mean, granted, it's like some might argue that they don't want to hear a whole movie of just, oh, the things that you guys like are dumb, we got to move on from it. But I liked the idea of we need a new Star Wars thing. We need a new trajectory. We have to break this endless cycle. And every little thing about that, every action that Luke took, every bit of dialogue, especially with everything with him on the island, seemed to reinforce that idea and his growth going from the guy who, you know, didn't want to do it. But now, anyway, I could go on for forever, but
no, as a moral commentary on, yeah, like, you becoming who you are based on, like, looking forward and not back. Like, I completely agree. The movie does that very, very well. But I'm just saying, as far as, like, it actually, like, breaking the mold of the way the movies were done, like, literally, like, while they're in the elevator heading towards the Emperor saying, like, I can feel the conflict in you. Like, I've done this before. Mm-hmm. But this movie is supposed to be about not doing this anymore.
And but it does go very different. Like, it sets you, for me, the thing that is that it was able to give, for the people who wanted it to recycle, for people who were like, oh, I don't like new things, this sort of let you have your cake and eat it too, where it's like, oh, this is going to be similar imagery, this is going to be a similar thing, but when the chips are down, it has to do something different in order for this thing to break this cycle.
I know, but I feel the conflict in you. I've done it once before. I haven't done it three times, four times. This isn't the James Bond series. Like, I don't know why. I'm just saying, I don't know why Star Wars has gotten the stigma that, like, I've done all the things that Star Wars does 20 times. We've only done a trench run twice. Because in Force Awakens, they decided to retread territory.
They did it on the Death Star 2, except it was in a tunnel. And then they did both of them in Force Awakens. So it's like it's a trench run, then a trench run that's inside a tube, and then it's a trench and tube in Force Awakens. Now, granted, that's right, just the Death Star, but I mean everything with, like, the evil leader who sits on the throne, and then the dark apprentice, and now you're going to be my apprentice, and blah 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 blah. That's all, like, people were seeing it coming from a mile away.
Scenes now twice.
But even once The Force Awakens came out, people were trying to look forward to what the next movie's going to be, and they were seeing this whole thing on the same trajectory, where it's like, oh, Rey's going to be tempted by the dark side, and Luke's going to come in and have to convince her to save the day, and they're going to have to redeem Kylo Ren in the third film.
Oh, that's fair. If you want to tell me that you could see the trajectory, but at least it was only based on seeing that trajectory only once before. But when I don't know, it was getting this stigma that, like, Star Wars had become James Bond, where it was like, yeah, we're going to have a meeting in M's office, and we're going to have, like, a gun barrel, you know, pre-gun barrel sequence, mm-hmm, or, you know, pre-titles credits. You know, like, it wasn't that formulaic. I'm glad that, like, we had a whole movie dedicated to saying that, no, we're not going to repeat things. But I just didn't think that, like, that was a thing that happened.
But it also accomplished next to nothing. Like, I mean, the big changes by the end, like, in terms of things, but really, I mean, it, like, with Luke specifically, that was miserable. Like, the Force stuff was handled cool. The Snoke stuff, like, Rey, Snoke, and Kylo was cool. in a way, except like I mentioned before, that Rey's past doesn't mean anything and Snoke doesn't mean anything. So all the setup is like, I mean, it's neat that they said, hey, you know, like the, actually the surprise is it doesn't mean anything, mm-hmm. which is interesting in its own
way. Which is not what JJ probably thought when he thought
about it. Probably not.
Right, right.
But it didn't go the way he thought.
Right.
But with Luke, I mean, this, the fact that he is like an old man who is a failure. And that and that failure, like it's not even like, hey, let's take your hero from before and make sure that he didn't have a happy life afterwards, then he fucked up everything. Luke learned failure, mm-hmm. and he can continue to learn failure. But the fact that Yoda comes to him and is like, hey, you know, failure's a teacher too. The fact that Luke doesn't know that, even after all the failures he's had, makes no fucking sense. Luke's whole arc makes no sense aside from this bizarre grimdark commentary. It's miserable. And the fact that he dies at the end for a completely unjustified reason, the fact that he just taps himself out too much, like, you know, because when Obi-Wan sacrificed himself, he did that knowing that, like, okay, so I'm like depleted by the Tatooine suns, you know, in the new canon. I'm old now. Like, let's have Darth Vader strike me down. Let me show Annie something fucking crazy that he does, and it's gonna piss him off. And then I'll be able to say, like, I'll be able to be with Luke the whole time. I'll use this new fucking force science that Qui-Gon taught me. You know, I'm putting in a bunch of, you know,
right.
new canon stuff into it. But you know, he gets struck down, and he becomes Luke's force ghost. But he was already old. He was never gonna manage it anyway. Well, Luke, the thing is, Luke is totally capable of doing anything still. This is a man who deserves redemption, and his redemption was one cool but ultimately fruitless standoff.
It's weird that you think like Obi-Wan was really old, whereas Luke could still do so much. Mark Hamill was the same age as Alec Guinness when he filmed this.
Man, that green milk from that sea cow titty, that keeps you young and virile.
You know, all the criticism.
By the way,
go ahead.
Yoda's full of shit because you guys noticed the books, right, at the end?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, he was like, let the past die and destroying the forest tree to teach Luke a lesson, but he wasn't actually burning any of the sacred Jedi texts down. He knew that Rey took it. He literally says, like, you know, nothing in that tree that does Rey not already possess. He was being literal. She stole the fucking books.
Yeah, he was covering for Rey.
He was covering for him, but I'm just saying, like, he's a little full of shit there because, you know, they're not saying get rid of the old Jedi dogma. They're saying, well, preserve it because this is, you know, we also need a reason to, you know, advance Rey's training, which they could have just done with Ghost Luke, you know, in the next movie. But,
right.
You know, they probably also want it to make it seem like she's like really, you know, preserving the Jedi's legacy.
Yeah, but it's weird because they're really ambiguous about it because they're like saying the movie spends a lot of time saying that there should not be a Jedi and there should not be a Sith. They should find some balance in between. Okay, right. Cool. But then it still ends on, yeah, but the Jedi, though. And I'm like, what?
That was probably one of my biggest critiques was that in the end, it's just like, you know, oh, the Jedi have to end. And I'm in agreement even going into the movie. I'm like, yeah, we got it. Dude, fuck this duality thing. We need something more than the two-party system. And then it ends with like... Yeah, but the Jedi. Bomb and I'm it. Like,
yeah.
I'm just hoping that my hope was that the trajectory of this, the new trajectory would be she's going to make her, it'll be Jedi in name only. Like, she's going to make her own thing. She's going to be the thing that actually makes balance. And when I mean, like, when they say, oh, we need balance, something that's not Jedi and not Sith, we need something new that's in between. No, because there's always going to be light and dark. You just can't be all the way Jedi and you can't be all the way Sith. These are the two extremes. It's not that we need one united party where everyone agrees. That's never going to happen. All Force users, that's what he says, the Force is not a thing that you use. You know, it's not like the Force is in everything. So it's in good
it
and bad.
It doesn't belong to any group.
Yeah, no person, like, it doesn't belong to any group. You can't claim ownership of it. So as long as there are people.
It's a good message. It's a good message for the real world. I totally, like, I'm into it. But I just, sometimes in the execution of that, like, it kills me in this movie that she just, like, it just cuts to the Falcon leaving, like, when she decides to go. In Empire Strikes Back, and I know, once again, I'm not trying to, like, I don't want direct retreading, but one of the most, like, well-done things is just the really hammering in the folly of Luke leaving early. And it just, there was no drama to her deciding, I'm not training with you, Luke. Like, that was a crazy thing to me when she was like, no, I think the key to this is Ben Solo. I'm taking off. And, but yet they didn't like, they didn't hammer home this, like, the impact of that.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it was also, once again, this is like, it's like the opposite. Luke's the one saying, no, I'm going to stay. You can't make me go. And then it stays with him. There's a reason why the camera stays with Luke watching Rey leave, where you're sitting there going, dude, what the fuck, Luke? You know, like, you're like, you should be on that thing. And, right. You know, and the on the note of everyone's like, oh, the this is not going to go the way you think. Like, you know, everyone's using that as an argument for, like, you know, whatever, to say that he's talking to the audience and shit. But for me, the more important line that stuck with me is immediately following that, where he says, you know, this isn't going to go the way you think. He's just, oh, but we need Luke Skywalker. He goes, no. What do you think? Luke Skywalker is going to walk out there with a lightsaber and just face down the entire army?
And a lot of people have said that is talking to the audience.
Well, whatever. I don't think it's, I mean, I think it's applicable, but I don't think this is like a ham-fisted attempt to talk directly to the audience, because I think half the audience is going, yeah, I am expecting that. Like, yeah, I do want that. And then you get it, but not in the way you expect. Like, you actually do get to have Luke have these badass, glorious moments, but then he goes one step beyond as a Jedi Master would do. And I know a lot of people, you know, I know you were, you hated, like, his last line, like, ah, see you around, kid, and everything else, but, like,
I was okay with see you around, kid.
But the, maybe it was Colin. Colin hated it, I think. I don't, whatever. But the idea is that, to me, I remember being so scared when we heard, oh, he's just going to die on Octo and he's going to project his force image and Kylo Ren was going to suck the life out of him. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, Kylo, I thought it was going to be like a psychic battle of the wills. But no, was just that he had exerted himself. And I'm like, that's still kind of weird. But then the more I thought about it, the more I'm like, well, he's so fucking powerful. He projected his image across the galaxy for like a good hour. And you see him struggling there too. And when he finally dies, I didn't even think of it as that. I mean, yeah, I'm sure the official explanation is he, you know, just he exerted himself so much, his body couldn't take it, and he just fucking died. But I also, in the moment, I took it to mean that he was letting go, that he was like,
and I don't have an issue with his death. It's just well,
I have a huge issue with his death. So what's the objective? So a Jedi's purpose is to let go and become one with the Force whenever you're feeling like, yeah, I did an okay job, I guess.
No, I don't think he thinks his job is done. I think he thinks the job is just fucking beginning. But
right, the war is on, and he ain't gonna fight it as a ghost.
No, but Rey will.
He should be.
What you're complaining about is exactly what happened with Yoda and Obi-Wan, and it's like, we don't complain about Yoda and Obi-Wan. It's like, how come Yoda didn't fucking leave Dagobah and help him go fight the Emperor? The two of them together clearly could outbest the Emperor. And it's like, no, Yoda stayed behind on Dagobah. Luke stayed behind on Akto.
In Jedi, Yoda looked like he was about to cough up a lung.
Luke is supposed to be old.
Yeah, but he's out there fishing. He's out there gathering milk. He's out there
He's out there holding himself in defense against Rey with a staff.
He's living a hearty lifestyle, like, pretty uncompromised.
But that's like old samurai shit. Him defending himself against Rey with a staff. And she did eventually knock him on his ass.
His story, like, this is like, I don't know what their objective was in taking Mark Hamill out of the picture, but this feels a little more like...
He's not out of the picture. He's going to be a Force ghost.
Yeah, I know. I meant like, in a bigger, like he should have been, like, especially... Honestly, I feel once Carrie died, they should have, like, come in there and changed the ending, because, like Luke Skywalker fighting alongside the rebellion, that's how it should be. That's the cooler story. Luke, I mean,
but that's not the Jedi way. Like, that's
the
not...
Jedi have to die. We're
no
more
it's
Jedi.
Not, no, it's,
Luke's,
it's
Luke
not...
Skywalker Force dude.
But Luke Skywalker, hero of the fucking rebellion, where this old grizzled guy is going to pick up a lightsaber and save the day. It's just not going to happen. There's no reality where that, and I don't mean in terms of writing. I mean in terms of the in the universe explanation. It's not going to happen. He's moved beyond that. There's no, like, Jedi's use the Force for knowledge and defense, never for attack. And it's we're expecting him to go John Wick on everybody.
He's a secondhand Jedi who never had formal training, who then screwed, and then in the continuity of this film, screwed up, like, could not hack it. He has led he was a hero of a generation, both in world and in our own world, and was a miserable failure and has no opportunity to redeem himself except as a ghost pal for Rey? Bullshit. Fuck all that. That's
right.
Stupid.
Right. No, Cap, I completely, like, I agree with you. Like, the saga of Skywalker is in such shambles as far as legacy is concerned. I would be better, I would feel better if they just acknowledge that this is no longer, like, the adventurer's tale, you know, like the tropes of that. This is no longer, you know, Joseph Campbell-style story, and this is instead a tragedy. Because, like, the Skywalker family line is just all sorts of fucked.
Well, did he not say, I mean, did the events of Return of the Jedi now mean nothing? Like, they still saved the galaxy. They still saved countless of, that's like saying Schindler's List. Like, oh, Schindler was a fucking failure. Fuck that guy. It's like he fucking saved all these people. Like,
well,
Luke Skywalker saved generations
like,
of people.
More like if Oscar Schindler shot Hitler, but then, like, Schindler's, you know, son then started, like, the fourth, like, German Reich.
But that's how real life goes. The evil's never completely defeated. Like,
yeah,
bad things still happen. World War II didn't stop all wars forever.
Or it's more like if Oscar Schindler gave birth to the Fourth Reich and then quit on the world and said, oh, well, I guess, the universe is evil.
Luke has...
Yoda did the same thing.
He has...
Yoda and Obi-Wan both did the exact same thing.
But he left behind the legacy of Luke to redeem it. Like...
Obi-Wan,
he's leaving behind,
like,
Rey's, but I'm just saying the Skywalker saga, I'm not talking about the universe in general. The tale that George wanted to tell of a family that, like, fell and then rose back again due to the love of his son, like, yeah, they have invalidated that.
That story, I don't understand how that story is ruined. That story still happened.
Because
this is a different story.
Because then Luke went on to actively participate in the creation of another Darth Vader.
That killed the entire, like, Republic, like, you know, led to the firing of Starkiller Base. You know, to destroy the Hosnian system and then take over the galaxy.
I don't see how you can have a happily ever after story with these characters and still have it called Star Wars.
That family line is, like, imperial, you know, galaxy domination, then a dude that interrupts it for 30 years, and then another guy who conquers the galaxy. I'm just saying the saga of Skywalker is a failed one. Like,
was it
it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just you have to acknowledge that things have changed.
Yeah, but was it not also failed in the expanded universe when the Solo children were fucking fighting each other because one goes evil and shit? Like...
Yeah, and I would argue that is the linchpin where it all fell apart. The nice thing about that saga is Darth Cadus wasn't in charge for very long, and his sister ended up defeating him, and his sister continued the good Skywalker Solo legacy. This trilogy has a very good possibility of just leaving the entire Skywalker, like, contribution to this galaxy as an overall negative one.
Unless Rey turns out to be the daughter of Han Solo and Leia.
Or we get a little Kylo, Rey, you know, action, and then, you know, Rey pops out a baby.
Which is super disturbing to me, because he's evil. Uh-huh. Like, he's totally awful. Like, even though I thought the scenes between them were really well done and speaks to Rey's characters, like, being rather, I don't know, naive but hopeful, like, I still think that, like, he's unforgivable, and her quest for redemption for him is challenging, to say the least, for me to buy that.
I think if Vader can be redeemed, so can Kylo Ren. Kylo Ren still is struggling, whereas Vader...
That's another failure of the Luke legacy. Luke shows up to Crait and tells Leia, I can't get him back. He's gone. Like, this is the man who saw good in Darth Vader. And he's like, I'm sorry, your son's fucking toast. And then goes out there and, you know, he's like, you can't save me. And he's like, you're right. I can't. Like, I'm not here to do that. Like,
because Kylo Ren blames Luke. He doesn't mean you can't be saved. He just means I can't save you.
Okay, I can buy that. But, you know, him saying that to Leia as, like, possibly their final interaction. I mean, definitely their final interaction, or at least on camera. Mm-hmm. You know, that's... It's pretty drastic.
But the way I took it to mean is that Luke had realized that Kylo Ren blames him, and he's going to take that willingly. He's going to accept the fact that I am the reason this is all happening. I am the reason that he turned and the First Order has risen again and everything else. I can't save him, but he will still be saved. And I'm going to use his anger against me to put it on me, even if it means my death, to make sure that Rey and everyone else gets away, because they're the ones who are going to... Because that's what he says. I'm going to kill you and the fucking Jedi. They're all fucking dead. And then we're going to do that. And he goes, yeah, everything you just said is wrong. Because Luke is now, as a master, playing the long game, sees beyond the mistakes he's made. And he's going to see how it's actually going to work out.
But there's no... Like, I can't... They could surprise me, but I don't see a situation where Kylo can be redeemed with any sort of stage because Snoke's gone. Like, there's no bigger evil to make it like he is the evil. What is he going to do redeem? Just say, oh, guys, you know what? I'm going to leave the First Order as a democratic society. Like, it's not going to go that way. He's literally Supreme Leader, which another twist that I think is very interesting. But, you know, it'd be nice if there was another Skywalker to at least make me feel like the Skywalker family isn't fucking nuts.
Because it's like, why did we come all this way? You know, why does any of this, we're indulging it because of our connection with what came before, but like, if this was its own thing, would we care? I don't know.
Unless Disney has done a complete reversion and this is no longer an adventurer's journey, this is a tragedy. This is, you know, the tragedy, you know.
I think that Disney does view this as the story of the Skywalker family and not about a fun space adventure anymore. Like, I will concede that. Because they're thinking, oh, well, if we want fun space adventures, here's a Han Solo movie for you. You know, like, they're not really looking to this. They're thinking, and the whole fucking bullshit thing they keep being like, oh, Star Wars is about family, family. Family. I'm like, all right, I'm pretty sure Star Wars is about, you know, hero's journey, lasers and stuff, but I don't know, man. Like, you know, I can't speak to where Disney's going to take it and how they view it and everything else. All I know is that for me, the most important part was how did they handle the Force? How did they handle this delicate thing that speaks to a much larger, deeper human spiritual element? And while I felt that they nailed that, any plot element, any plot problems or pacing problems or anything else was kind of, it just became secondary to me because of the way that I felt that they landed it at the end, which I thought was going to be the worst part. I thought that was going to be like terrible. And maybe because my expectations were so low, I enjoyed it. I don't know.
Yeah. I honestly, Doug, like that's the best reasoning I've gotten for someone liking this movie. You know, finally something like, that I can say, like, oh, I can see that. I mean, I don't agree with it, but I totally buy, you know, that positive reaction to the film. I don't know.
You know, the thing that upset, I don't want to say upset because that makes it sound like I was angry, but the one that confused me was, and you're not alone in this, but everybody started to list this as, like, the worst Star Wars film of all time, even below the prequels. And that's when I was just like, what? Like, even below
right now, it's like I'm removing. Like, I initially had said that there was a long space between Attack of the Clones and this movie. I'm removing that long space because I got to focus on the things that I enjoyed when I watched the second time around, and like I realized I can live with this film. But I just, you know, Attack of the Clones and Phantom Menace and Revenge of the Sith, like, I got to sit there and think to myself, like, oh, you know, there's some interesting new institutions and planets, and I want to know more. This movie, like, I don't want to know any more about this movie. I'm eager for Solo to come out so I can get some more Star Wars. Like the Canto Bite book's actually pretty good. The novellas are actually pretty good inside. But, like, I'm so put off by how poorly Canto Bite was portrayed that I don't want to know anything more. Crate's not that interesting. It's very pretty. Like, there's nothing expanding, like, this movie's universe is just this movie. Even Force Awakens, I felt like the galaxy was big. Like, this movie literally, like, there's even a part, you know, they contact their Outer Rim allies or they reach out to them, and the galaxy doesn't respond. Like, that to me symbolizes how I feel about this movie. Like, they're alone in this. And I just, there's nothing to keep me, like, I got the Cobalt Squadron book in the mail today that I'm going to start reading tonight. And I just... I don't really care that much about Cobalt Squadron. Like, I don't want to know any more about it.
Well, they all did. Like, so,
yeah.
I don't know. For me, it's like the idea was that I think Rian Johnson was like, well, we have to have them at their lowest point, and it has to be lower than Empire. Like we have to trim down the resistance to like 80 people and then see them bounce back in order for the victory to be that much sweeter. And I get that.
That's fine,
you know,
but
yeah.
You know, Cloud City was interesting, and you know they introduced the bounty hunters in Empire. Like that was an interesting concept.
Yeah, but like, but I don't see how like Dagobah, other than like Yoda's presence there in the Force Cave, was any different than like Octo, or like I was interested in Octo. I was still interested in Canto Bight because we got to see so little of it. I wanted to see actually more. And you know, Return of the Jedi, again, it just goes back to Tatooine, goes back to the fleet, goes back to Death Star 2. I mean, we do get Endor.
Yeah, but hold on. Like, first of all, Endor is full of ecology and crazy aliens. Like, when you know, delve into it. And then Tatooine had Jabba's palace filled with all kinds of crazy characters. Like, Canto Bight showed me so little, and also showed me, like, you know, they talked about a seedy side, but they only showed some kids getting whipped. Like, to me, that's not that interesting. Like, I've seen that in Phantom Menace. Like, there's not, it's just, I don't want to go back to this world. I guess that's the big difference. I guess when I saw Attack of the Clones, which I considered to be the worst of the prequels, like, I want to go back to Coruscant. I want to go back to see more about this new trade, you know, like the Separatists, because, you know, back then it was just the Trade Federation. Now it's the Separatists. I wanted to know more about the Kamino cloners and the clone army. I wanted to know even more about the new Jedi that are featured in the film. I don't want to go back to this movie. I dreaded seeing this movie again. I enjoyed it a little bit more the second time, but this universe, like, it's the first time I've seen a Star Wars movie where I'm like, I don't want to go back to this one.
Yeah, I'm eager to see it again because, like, I do feel like I'm like somewhere between the two of you, because I mean, that this is the problem, is that I think we all see each other's points in this, and they're all accurate and valid simultaneously.
It's just whether or not one thing bugs you more than the other, because there's I'm sure there was things
it's about balance.
Yeah,
all these things balance.
I think that's where the fourth. If I were repressed more, I think I would probably point out things that bugged me that probably didn't bug either of you,
right?
And vice versa. So, you know, people have been asking me, like, Doug, what did you think of this? And I'm like, honestly, I don't know if I can recommend this movie to you, because I don't know how you're going to react, because I don't know how my close friends are reacting, let alone I didn't think I would react this way. So I honestly can't tell anyone if they're going to like it or not. And I was fairly confident that I could recommend Force Awakens to certain people and be like, oh, you're going to love it. Or you might think it's a little silly, but I think you're going to like it. You know, whatever. This one, I really don't fucking know, because it's not just among ourselves, but online. And Matt, you're trying to be as constructive as possible, but there are some people online that are fucking like they're burning Star Wars shit now. Like, for them, they're like, when Leia did her force pull through space into this thing, some people are like, Star Wars jumped the shark with that. Fuck this movie, burn it to the ground. I'm like, oh my God. Like,
yeah, actually, I thought that was reasonably well done. I think it's inconsistent with later parts of the movie, but I do think that part is well done.
Yeah, and I almost fucking cried. Like, I almost wept at that.
Yeah, on the opposite end of things, too, I've seen things online where people, like, the highest, you know, rated comments on Reddit sometimes are like, you know, in posts about how the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes is so far below the critic score, is like people saying, like, all the people who are saying this movie is terrible are a bunch of, like, I've seen some horrible things, people calling them, you know, mouth breathers and neck beards, that, like, just, you know, oh, they changed up my Star Wars. People are getting, like, a lot of, like, vitriol about this movie both ways. Like, guys, let's talk about what we did and didn't like about this movie. Let's not, like, criticize the other side.
I think, you know what? You know what might be the biggest failing of this movie, sincerely, is the movie was trying to reach for this message of light and dark, Sith and Jedi. Fuck that. We need to, like, make a new thing and be united under this new thing. And all it did was drive a huge wedge between all the fans, like, in a way that I've never seen. And that's even including the prequels. Like, now I will say one thing, though. There was a commenter on Reddit, and I can't speak for the validity of this because I was not alive at the time. But he says he was a young lad when he saw A New Hope in theaters. And he was a young man when Empire Strikes Back came out. And he says that when Empire Strikes Back came out, people were just as divided then as we are now about The Last Jedi. Like, some people hated Empire Strikes Back when it came out and were like, this is terrible. It ruins everything I loved about Star Wars. How could they do this? I don't even know if I'm a fan anymore. Like, all the everything, like, sort of like poetry, it rhymes. Like, people are doing the same thing now as when Empire came out. But now Empire is obviously regarded as, like, you know, the untouchable film among most people that are Star Wars fans. So I'm not saying that's going to happen with The Last Jedi. I'm just saying I'm really interested where this is going to stand in the long term. Like this and Rogue One, I want to know where they stand 10 years from now.
I know that
For
all the problems with Rogue One, I felt more comfortable enjoying Rogue One, even with shit like that awful, inexcusable Ponda Baba scene, of which there's nothing even remotely similar in, or as remotely shameful in Last Jedi, that or the 3PO scene in Rogue One. Both those are more terrible than anything that happens in The Last Jedi, but I think I still enjoy Rogue One more.
See, I think looking back, I mean, I'm probably going to eat these words later, but I look back at Rogue One and I have yet to see it. I saw it once in the theater, and I saw it all the way through one more time on at home, and I've seen other scenes on Netflix and stuff, like skipping through trying to see scenes and stuff. My current thing on Rogue One is I think that the characters weren't fully developed for the movie and they didn't come through all the way. I know they had great ideas, but it just didn't come through. And the rest of it just feels like a big, fat, warm nostalgia blanket. And that's nice. That's fine. But it doesn't really work completely as a film for me. And I think Force Awakens, I really like the characters. I really like the setup. But it didn't, and the nostalgia was wrong. Like, it wasn't, didn't fit right. It just didn't feel right. So it succeeded where Rogue One failed, and vice versa. Last Jedi, I feel, has the weaknesses and strengths of both. And that's why it's so difficult to pin down and why everybody is reacting to it differently.
It's tough. This is so tough. I mean, and like I said, I mean, now I'm thinking about it. And I'm like, but I do really want to see it again, because there's so many things that I thought were neat. But and then so many things that were frustrating. What sucks is that, you know, this is it. You know, this is the definitive word on Star Wars. This is where the characters we care about, old and new, this is the official word on it. It's not going to change again. This is it. And there's, I feel, a lack of reverence towards that. And I don't mean that, you know, no one should be handled delicately, audiences included. I'm all for radical change. But
even this is not radical change. And look at how people are reacting now. If anything, Disney's going to freak the fuck out and be like, no, don't do anything different now. We have to just make simple things all over again.
It's funny. I was actually just discussing that today, is that, like, it's not a good thing for, even if you hated this movie, it's not a good thing for them to necessarily know that you hated it, because when they counteract, like if Disney decides that people reacted to this poorly, the counteractive, you know, basically just going to remake A New Hope over and over and over again.
The course correction is going to be a rough one if they decide that something needs to change. And because, I don't know. So, but I guess, I mean, we're running long. I don't know how much longer you guys want to go before we got to wrap it up. But I think. I'm going to have to see it again, but walking out of this movie, I feel like, despite the weaknesses, I still really enjoyed it. And I don't think that there's anything that can't be fixed or anything that ruins anything. Because for me, the parts that it lands, I feel like make up for it. And I can't say the same for a lot of the prequel stuff. Like, there's things in the prequels that I like that are completely unrelated to the story or characters or whatever. I like things on purely technical levels, whereas here I don't like things on a technical level, such as pacing and editing or word choices for certain dialogue things. Like, you know, people were complaining about how characters spoke with certain things, but I haven't heard anyone else point out how someone says, "It's now or never." What scene am I quoting? Yeah. Like, I'm quoting half the movie. It's now or never. It's like the most commonly used phrase. They said it's now or never more than May the Force be with you.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah, I actually want a supercut of like Poe screaming in his X-wing isms.
Yeah,
because like it was cute in Force Awakens, but now he's done, like, you know, he's gone a little overboard.
Yeah. So, but even despite all that, and I can't even really fully, you know, figure out why. I have to let it digest even more, but. At the end of the day, I walk out of, or you know, I finish seeing this movie, and I still feel, it still made me feel good about the Force and our place in it and how it relates to real life. Maybe on subsequent viewings, things are going to bug me more. I don't know, but
Force Awakens got worse over time for me, and Rogue One has actually gotten a little better. And I know why Rogue One's gotten better for me. Is I think the expanded stuff for Rogue One has been, like, really, really good, and that character, you know, that development that may have been lacking in the actual movie, like, you know, now I know everything about, like, Jin's life going in, and how it plays in so well to the actual events of the movie. Not every movie has that, that little extra spark, I guess. Yeah. But, opinions change over time. I don't know how I'm curious to see how I feel about Last Jedi in like a year.
Expanded content is tough because I feel like us three, we knew DJ and Haldo a bit better than other people, and those characters were pretty lacking on screen if we didn't have what little we had to go with for them. But then there is also, there's some real achievements in this, like I was just getting to like Haldo and I didn't want to lose her, and then when we did, but like that scene, that sequence of destroying the supremacy was visually incredible. Yeah. Absolutely incredible. Yeah.
And it proved to Poe that she was the hero that he didn't think she was. He was wrong about her. Yeah. It solidified that.
And Rey in the in that Force cave, that was a really cool scene. I don't think it added anything to the story.
Yeah, that's
all,
what
but
I'm wondering. Like, what did we learn? What did she learn? I'm sure that's just up to the interpretation.
Yeah, mutually nothing.
It wasn't clear.
I feel, but it was cool, and it was cool to have that in Star Wars, as was that the dynamism of the communication across boundaries that was so well handled. It's shocking how well handled that was, because it could have been terrible. So I'm very curious about Rian Johnson's trilogy of films. I don't know that it makes a difference that it's not a numbered trilogy. I'm not sure, because I do still like him as a director, but I don't know what happened here. I don't know where to put the blame, because there are some things that I feel are glaring like problems that are just kind of damning. Most of all, Poe being a murderer and getting away with it. But
he should be in the brig. Like they should be like shooting him for like neglectful command or something.
I mean, if this was a regular military, yeah. But at this point, he's one of the six pilots they have left, and he is an amazingly skilled pilot. So they need him more than ever.
He is very skilled. Well, he's a scoundrel. Liam likes him. Yeah. So
he's got a thing for scoundrels, clearly.
Anyway, so this conversation is obviously going to keep going. It's going to keep going probably for the rest of our damn lives.
We've been wrong about so much more before. 2 weeks from now, we're all going to be going, you know what? It's out. It's okay. It's like it's as soon as we see Han Solo go, oh God, I thought Last Jedi was bad, but holy shit, Han Solo. Well,
hopefully that's not going to be the case, but we can never say. I mean, this analysis that we've been doing since the era of the Disney Star Wars, it's complicated. Like there's a lot of moving pieces. There's a lot of layers to it that are hard for us as the general public to discern.
Episode 9, Return of the Clones. Oh, I don't know about this one, guys.
Jeez. Ugh, it's like poetry, it rhymes. So keep this discussion going on our Star Wars Spoilers Facebook group. By all means, like it's far from over. Let's take this fight to the skies.
And just to add to that, like it's felt really good talking about it. So if there's anyone like you really need to get something out about this movie, engage with people about it, because it's like it feels a lot better.
Because to be clear, I really enjoyed this film, but if someone says they didn't enjoy it, I don't think you're an idiot. I don't think you didn't get something. I want to be the cheerleader who's like, hey, I know you didn't like it, but I think there's a lot of things to like in this, so let me tell you why I like it, and I would encourage you to find something you like about it too, because I'm sure there's something in here for everybody. And for someone to, as Star Wars fans, we all want to like it. And when I feel the hurt that other Star Wars fans feel, I want to comfort and be like, it's fine. We've been through worse. Like we have survived much worse than this. We as a people can move on. We can do this.
But, hopefully the future of media as we know it and storytelling as we know it will evolve and not be impacted by one giant monolithic company owning 40% of it.
I really want to hear what George's ideas were for 7, 8, 9.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean, maybe they stink.
They
maybe
could
maybe they're brilliant.
But he's been a great idea guy.
Yeah.
I want to know. I want to know what the fresh take would have actually been, and not whatever the fuck has happened. This directionless mess that of.
I know you guys feel like it's directionless, and I think it does kind of shove the mess to someone else now, to someone else's, to JJ's plate. But I felt better coming out of this in terms of like the trajectory than I did out of Force Awakens.
Well, apparently Iger said at a some sort of shareholders conference type thing that today was the day that Abrams is supposed to pitch his story for 9. So if you think that there's a trajectory, Iger doesn't know yet.
No, I know, and that worries me. But yeah. Like, you know, in terms of, I feel like that this was a way of telling Star Wars fans the universe is open, anything can happen, we can go anywhere. That there's so much to be explored. Whereas Force Awakens, we're just kind of like, hey, it's fun again. It's okay to love us again, and like that was it for that. That was the message I got from that. So yeah, I don't know.
That's a fair assessment.
If you dig what we do, please support us on Patreon at patreon.com/nerdyshow. It supports all the shows in the Nerdy Show Network, State of the Empire included. You can also shop on Amazon at nerdyshow.com/Amazon. Any of our affiliate links will give back to us. But if you don't want to spend any money, hop on iTunes, give us a rating or a review, or on Podchaser. Same thing there. But you can rate and review certain episodes. Like if you want to say, hey, this specific episode sucked, I hate these opinions, and eat shit and die, you can. I would really prefer you don't. I would really prefer a 5-star review. I encourage that.
If you gave us a 5-star review, you can say eat shit and die, and that's okay. I'd let that slide.
But if you love us, we do need your support. There's a great many Star Wars podcasts out there, and you know, we want to keep doing this. So help us keep doing it by rating and reviewing us on iTunes and supporting the show on Patreon, which has apologized for their past transgressions, and everything's sort of fine now. So if you're following the Patreon drama, it's gotten better. And if not, then don't sweat it. Everything's the same way it was. We'll be back extremely soon in just a matter of days, because Doug and I will have done the Star Wars VR Void Secrets of the Empire at Disney Springs in Orlando, Florida. Matt, hopefully you'll be joining us for that discussion.
I'd like to.
And we'll see you real soon, and then we'll probably catch you again in 2018 once the dust is settled. Bye, I'm Cap.
Bye, I'm Doug.
Bye, I'm Matt.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.